evening, everyone, and welcome to the 2012 State of the Market teleconference call. This is David Phelps, and I, along with my friend and colleague Jim Ingersoll, will serve as co-hosts for tonight's call. If you are in any way involved in real estate investment, whether on a passive or active basis, I know that you will find tremendous value in tonight's call. We have many people with us live on the call tonight, and as promised, a replay link will be sent out tomorrow and a full transcript of the call available within a week or so, because I know that the information on this call is something that everyone will want to refer back to more than once. Additionally, for those of you who are live with us tonight, Jim and I came up with a special bonus that we will present to you at the end of the call, so I know you won't want to miss that. Now, real estate is a local market-based asset or investment class. Certainly, the overall national picture, the state of the economy, the unemployment rate, the continuation of defaulting mortgages and backloaded foreclosure inventory sets the stage. All of these issues, however, and the complete uncertainty as to how all this is going to play out politically and globally really depends on what you do with this information right back in your own local market. The problems I just cited, along with that uncertainty, actually is what creates the real opportunity. But you have to know how to position yourself to seize that opportunity. And that's the problem for most. They have no idea. It's not a lack of information. It's actually information overload without a game plan. So use this information tonight to your advantage and be able to proceed with a level of confidence and with known risk tolerance and go where others are not able to go because they're frozen on the sidelines with apprehension about the uncertainty and what's next. So to help you, Jim and I have assembled truly an all-star cast tonight. We invested significant amounts of money to bribe some of these guests away from the likes of American Idol and Keeping Up with the Kardashians, two of my favorite shows, just to be with us tonight. In fact, Eddie, I think that's where you're headed right when we finish this call tonight. Is that correct?
Absolutely. I'm having, you know, I'm in Dallas, and one of them's dating one of the, or married to one of those basketball players now, so we're going to have dinner right as soon as we're done with the Kardashians.
I knew you'd have that connection. Now my contract for tonight's call said just give the intro no more than 10 minutes, and so I think I've done that. But one of the key principles that I've learned in my life in terms of leverage is to get as much done as you can through the efforts of other people. So, sure, I could be doing this call with Jim tonight all alone, and we would have to expend a lot of time, energy, and effort, but instead we have five other hired guns on the program to do the heavy lifting. Now, that's a takeaway or a right or downer. Get things done through other people. Now, you're all smiling, aren't you? Let me say one more thing before – Let me say one more thing before I turn this over to Jim. First, we got a ton of great questions that were submitted in advance of the call. So to expedite the call tonight, Jim and I have already compiled them into separate piles, and we've come up with questions for the panel that should answer at least 80% of what was submitted. For those questions that – we do not answer specifically enough for you, please resubmit those questions to Debbie. That's Debbie, D-E-B-B-I-E, at davidphelpsinternational.com. Debbie at davidphelpsinternational.com. And Jim or I will respond to those questions individually. Now, what you want to do with the information that you gleaned from the call tonight is to take it back to your local investment arena and put it into place what makes sense for you. Don't try to do it all. You want to be aware of all the opportunities, but be selective about your own strategy. What works for one person in his or her area might not be right for you. The other thing to remember is that you need to do a personal assessment of your own assets, that being what you personally bring to the equation. Is it time? Is it knowledge, experience, capital to invest, network affiliations with others with whom you can do some kind of joint venture? So we all have different assets, and the real takeaway here is that no man is an island in this game. Don't try to do this alone because your results will be limited. You get much farther down the road in life by working with and masterminding with other like-minded people. So just assess what you have and then go get what you need and put it together. Everyone on the call tonight does something different, and because of who they are and the assets that they have accumulated or developed, you need to take personal inventory and figure out what you have to offer or what else you could bring. So the way we'll work the rest of the call tonight is that Jim will ask and moderate the questions to our guests. And to all the guests tonight, let's do this. I know every one of you could go hours or days on any one of these subjects. Since we're limited, give us your best stuff in 2 to 3 minutes if you can. For each question asked, we probably won't have all five of you answer that particular question. But if Jim and I don't like your answers, then we're going to go on to the next panelist until we get the answer we like. And then we'll fire out another question. But seriously, if any of you have something that you really feel that you can add to a particular subject or question tonight, just jump in and we'll let you put in your 2 cents. A couple of our panelists have to leave early, which means we couldn't afford to keep them over an hour, but we acknowledge that and we're just glad to have you here. As a result, we're probably going to work you as hard as we can while you're on the call. All right, Jim, I'm ready to let you take it away. And to start out, why don't you let each of our guests just give a brief introduction, just go around the horn, let them give an intro to their background, their bio, and what they're doing today in their markets and in their respective businesses.
All right, that sounds great. I am excited to be here. I hope everybody's got a pen and some paper handy because you're going to learn a lot of stuff. You're going to want to make notes, even if you can go back and listen to the replay. Lisa, why don't you start us off? Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Okay, my name is Lisa Morin Broma. I've been a real estate investor since 1978. I've been in the note business pretty actively since 1988, both as a broker and as an investor. I have consulted with some of the nation's largest institutional buyers of mortgages, seller financing, as well as developed a unique IRA program where individual IRA owners invest in real estate and other hard assets that are not your traditional stocks, bonds, and mutual funds. I now work on the other side of that as a consultant working with product providers, specifically large hedge fund, private real estate firms that securitize products and either on Wall Street or they are working with Fannie Freddie and HUD to buy thousands of properties in bulk and disperse those properties amongst us private investors, and I act as a conduit for some of those people. Tonight I come to you from Orlando, Florida, where I am at the Heckliger Institute, which is an institute for attorneys and CPAs that specialize in unique entity structures like grantor trusts, personal property trusts, which are minor compared to what they do, for high-income, high-net-worth people who want to invest in weird, unique, and wonderful investments. How's that?
You must have a lot of time on your hands. I'm just kidding you.
Yeah, a lot. And I love my real estate, and I now live in Florida next to the likes of Peter Fortunato, Mike Meeker, Dennis Cavalcanti, and some others that are my buds. Yeah,
some of my favorite people, Lisa. That's great.
There you go. I love them. I see them all the time. I'll say hi for you.
All right, Walter.
Yes, sir.
Take it away, Walter. It's nice to have you on the call, and
thank you, Jim.
I appreciate it. I've learned a lot from you over the years, so take it away.
Well, thank you, Jim, and I appreciate being on this panel. I know every one of them. I've been around them a lot, and everybody on this panel is truly a gifted investor and a all-around good guy or gal, Lisa, for you.
Thank
anyway,
you.
I'm from Jackson, Mississippi. Started investing in 1981, so that makes me about a 30-year veteran. Best of times, the worst of times, good times, bad times. We've seen them all in 30 years, all of us in this room, on this call have. Anyway, I am an active investor in our local economy only. I don't go outside of my market here, and buying and selling, wholesaling houses, have done a lot of that in the past. Today, the game has changed tremendously, and I think perhaps everybody would agree with that, that the old models that we were using don't work quite as well today. So embracing technology and internet and videos to buy, sell, and manage houses, and using a lot of note creation, and I don't really buy notes. I create them and sell them mostly to IRAs. So I'm doing that in my local market as long as a long-time landlord. That ought to wrap me up, Jim.
All right. Boy, that's a lot of stuff. All right. Scott Britton, I am really excited to have you on the call tonight. Why don't you give some of your background and what you'd like to do?
Okay, Jim. Well, you know, I've been in the game since 79. I saw Lisa get in 78, so I decided I better get in too.
Okay.
You know, I started buying paper in the note business, and you know, real estate always fascinated me, so I jumped into the whole game. I've had the opportunity to rub shoulders with most of the, you know, quality investors around the country, which is actually a very good group, and you can learn a lot from them. But I'm coming to you from a jetty in the middle of the Ross Bennett Reservoir in Ridgeland, Mississippi, my condo here. And what we're looking at right now is acquisitions, and acquisitions from a perspective of holding them long enough for the market to return, which we think could be as long as 10 years, but putting in the holding pattern and taking advantage of low prices, low interest rates today to make the acquisitions. Rentals are strong, so we're taking advantage of that. And that's our main thrust, but we're seeing a lot of owner-financed deals going down now, so the paper business holds promise. I'm sure Eddie's going to talk about that. A lot of things you can do with a note and mortgage to realize the value out of it, so we're keeping our eyes peeled for opportunities in that respect, too. But really looking forward to, and where I think the big opportunity is this market cycle that we're in. I don't know that we're at the bottom yet, but we're close enough to the bottom where the numbers are really making sense on the acquisition side. So, you know, we're looking at real estate as being the asset class we want to invest in right now.
Awesome. Thank you so much. All right, I'm glad you mentioned Eddie. So take it away, Eddie Speed. It's so nice to have you with us.
Well, thank you very much, and hello, everyone. To everyone on the panel, that's my dear friend and someone that I've had a long experience with. I'm honored to be with you. I started buying notes in 1980. You guys are going to think that you're all from Mississippi because I actually started in Mississippi as well, but I've lived in Dallas-Fort Worth for about 30 years. Bought notes across the United States, bought over 30,000 notes, so have been very active in that business. About 10 years ago, I developed a training company focused on the note business, and true enough, it would be called Note School. And so, you know, I've been not only on the note side and buying notes and trading notes, but also I've been on the educational side. So kind of right now, what I see in the market is you know, we were waiting all in 07, 08, 09. We were waiting for this big market, this big dump of properties and big dump of notes. And what I'm going to report to you guys tonight is, by God, it is happening. It's been slower than people thought, but it is happening right now. And we've worked very hard with kind of the new investor in the market, which is the hedge funds, which we've already, Lisa's already alluded to. That's been the new 900-pound gorilla in our business, and trying, I think Lisa and myself and a lot of people have really spent a lot of time learning how to work with these guys. You know, they came into real estate investing because of they've abandoned the stock market, essentially, because of, you know, instability there, and they've kind of moved off into notes and real estate investing, and that's where we really see the activity today. Obviously, you know, seller financing is growing exponentially, and that's an area that I've stayed in, you know, super active in as well.
All right. Thank you very much. And finally, the great John Groom. Take it away, John.
I don't know how great it is, but actually I'm a professional shoulder looker over. And I've been actually working with a lot of people even on this panel for a long time. I'm the one that they call on particular deals sometimes to get the tax ramifications of it. And sometimes what we do is figure out ways that we can structure a transaction so that it doesn't have to be in a pension plan, because you can buy and sell and not have taxes, even though there's a real life substantial profit dealing with stuff that we all learned from the same people, from Pete Fortunato, from Jack Miller and the like, Mike Meeker a lot. Present value concepts that can really get rid of tax consequences. And that's kind of what I do. I get to work with all the fun people. I'm an accountant, who means that the post office was too boring for me. So basically what I do is most of my real estate investing is buy and hold forever. And I've learned a lot from the people around me, but I'm a consultant and a guy that plans the taxes, and I use a lot of trusts. I file trust returns, and there are a lot of things that we can do both in and out of pension plans that that work really well. So I'm real glad to be here. In my local Austin market, things are almost like I was a dentist or an accountant, the whole thing. Everything is pretty stable. Our prices go up about 3% a year. Our rents go up. Our average rent is a little over $1,000 a month, maybe closer to 11. And our vacancy rate is probably only 3% in the whole area. And mine, of course, is zero. So
that's great. It. All right, David, I think I got everybody on the panel, right?
You've got everybody. So I think you're ready to start firing some of the toughest questions you've got straight at them, Jim. Go for it.
All right. Well, I'm going to start off hitting on to Lisa and Eddie because you both worked with hedge funds. And, Lisa, I want to thank you for sharing the news that you did this week. You kind of broke the news to David and I anyways.
Are you welcome?
Yes, that's awesome. I love sharing and networking. The Obama administration, in conjunction with the federal regulators this week, led of course, by Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, says they're really close to announcing this pilot program to sell government-owned foreclosures in bulk to investors as rentals. So I guess the government's finally seeing us investors as maybe the cavalry because there's so much shadow foreclosure inventory and they're trying to find a way to get it to us. But they say they want to bring back private capital and help support rental opportunities for households, particularly since rent rates are up while house prices are down. So, Lisa, you're the one who brought this information this week. What's your take on this news? And then, what does it mean? Go ahead. Take it away.
Okay, first of all, I am extremely excited about this, and it's not new. I drug Eddie to an event with me in October. He was kind enough, he and his wife, to fly out to Southern California, where one of the panelists was Fannie Mae, and his wife, Martha, and I went up and talked to Fannie Mae about this issue. So I am very thrilled to see that they are finally waking up and saying, maybe the private investor can solve the crisis of America, at least the real estate crisis. I think what this means is they're going to expect to have a certain amount of criteria that investors are going to have besides dollars, especially in management and property management specifically, accounting systems, management companies that are going to be able to handle these bulk foreclosures that will be sold to private investors. I'm assuming it's still going to be done in pools. I don't think they're quite ready to deal with the onesie-twosies as yet. I talked to Bruce Norris briefly, who was the gentleman who handled the event in October that Eddie and I attended, and he agrees that I think in the beginning when they release this, it will be to people in pools. So the natural thing for your listeners is for those of you in or out of your IRA that want to take a chance and invest in wholesale-type properties that are going to be had through Fannie Freddie HUD, and you've got a management system in place that can handle fair market value, the correct types of rules in rental properties, whether they're Section 8 housing or regular rentals to people. A lot of these individuals who are being foreclosed on are going to want to stay in their properties. I think that's the impetus for this type of a program working with a private investor. Eventually, my hope is it's going to trickle down to onesie-twosies to us investors that want to cherry pick. In the beginning, I think it's going to be for the private investors that are smart enough to pull. Obviously, having an IRA bet, Walter can correct me if I'm wrong, I think it's a great investment for those in an IRA that are interested in pooling investments with other IRAs to have somebody who knows what they're doing to represent us, to buy some of these in good markets. Eddie, Walter, speak up if you don't agree or agree with me.
Well, I think you definitely can do that, and that's a good use of combining what monies you have in the various IRA or specialty accounts to or the SEPs or the simples, and to go combine them with people that you know and trust and let them rip and run.
Absolutely. What do you think, Eddie?
I think it's a whole new frontier, and the opportunity today, you know, and we've all talked about this amongst ourselves for now a couple of years, and Lisa and Walter, you've heard me refer to this countless times talking about anxious money, you know. The one market condition, and we all talk about starting back around 1980, different dates, but, you know, somewhere in that era, we've never seen a market where there's so much private money that's really chasing alternative investments from stocks And I think we'll all agree that what we see is they're either chasing notes or they're chasing property. That is the number one alternative that they're considering.
Okay,
yeah, I agree with that too.
Go ahead, Lisa. What?
I was going to say I agree with that as well. And what on a local basis, because I know your question was dealing with affiliated with hedge funds, but how can we use this information for the local markets, assuming that we have somebody that's a trusted real estate investor who knows their stuff, that's been in the business for a long time, that can spearhead that operation. I can see people who are wanting to get into the market in different levels of expertise working together with somebody kind of as a JV, equity participation, call it what you will, but having the ability to be able to front some of this money so that they can invest in properties in their local markets and kind of have some control, not total control, in properties that they know and they can understand and they feel comfortable in that particular market. I see nothing but positive if the government really does it. My question is the government going to really do it?
Well, I think there's no choice. They have to do it, Lisa. I mean, there's no question that you know, we've all banged around the inventory levels and what the distressed debt and distressed asset people have referred to as shadow inventory, meaning the inventory that's not listed with realtors. And this is the only real solution they've come up with to really liquidate the market of this massive amount of foreclosed properties.
Yeah, I agree with you. I'm hoping my guy from Fannie Mae beats everybody else up and gets them on the same page, and they, like they said in October, Eddie, that they finally realize that we, the private investor, are the people that are going to solve this problem.
We're not the enemy,
are we? And the banks have to help us. No, we're not. And the banks got to step to the plate and help.
So would you guys recommend that? How would you guys recommend that the average investor in the average city in the United States who wants to get into this, what are the first two or three things that they should do? I heard, Lisa, you mentioned some great ideas really quickly about joint venturing and equity participation. But if you're the average investor in the average town across America, what are the first couple things you would do if you were trying to get yourself ready to try to capitalize on some of this opportunity?
Well,
Eddie,
go ahead, Lisa. I thought you asked me, but go ahead, Eddie. Go ahead. Go ahead.
Well, you know, here's what I say. And, Lisa, you've done consulting for hedge funds as I have, and I've done training for some of the hedge funds, and I have a very large hedge fund right now that is disseminating, you know, recommending all their investors take training from me. And the point that I'm making is we have to learn to do business with these bigger operators. If you find someone that's in a position to take down 100 properties, well, the very nature of a hedge fund is they only want to own that thing for 90 days and they want to sell it. So they're buying by the case and selling by the bottle. And I've got to say that, you know, they're going to make a profit, but let me say something. For them to be in a position to buy bulk across the country and then re-aggregate these things, sell them more on an individual basis or on a smaller package, I think it's the future of the business. And I'm very curious of Walter and Scott and those guys. I mean, you guys are old-time guys. Do you see it this way?
Now, Scott's not old, but I would love to hear from you, Scott. What's your take on this?
Presents an interesting dilemma, I think. Obviously, the hedge funds have the cash to take down these large portfolios, but everything sooner or later is going to be based on price and the ability of the end buyer to take the hedge funds out at a price that makes sense to them. And then the second part of that is where are they going to get the capital to do that? Obviously, the sources that were available 4 or 5 years ago have dried up. So, you know, if the government's talking about private capital coming into this, I think everybody's got to start looking at how can they start accumulating some private capital to take advantage of these acquisitions. And obviously take, you know, if this does go down the way the government is teasing us with the information, then I think it's probably going to affect prices downward a little bit further, which might make good good acquisition prices. It just all depends on what the hedge funds are going to do. I've already been dealing with some of the hedge funds that are trying to liquidate properties. I haven't found them to be very realistic in their pricing so far. But we'll see what happens. With more properties are on the market, prices I think are going to have to go down. And then, guys like me that want to acquire some, we've got to figure out where we're going to raise the capital to do that and how and on what basis. But, the thing that I think is a big play, and if you think of it this way, what people have typically done with their cash is throw it at Wall Street, and Wall Street hasn't been a very good custodian of that cash up to this point. So, if you invest in, just pick a company, invest in a mutual fund, it does nothing for your local economy. And so I think the big point that could be stressed right now is the need to invest locally. And locally, it could be here in Jackson, or it could be in Dallas, it could be anywhere where the numbers make sense. But, you know, if you can find capital that will help in this acquisition process, you can actually turn neighborhoods around, you can turn create jobs. I mean, a lot of stuff, but it's going to take it's going to happen on the local level. So I think one of the buzzwords coming down the pike is going to be invest local.
I like that. That's a good concept for people that are talking about with potential private lenders. Now, Eddie, I heard you say that hedge funds typically or quite often will buy 100 houses and their goal is to liquidate them in 90 days. And I've seen some of that in Virginia here, actually. They're almost like a large wholesaler. But in this case, Fannie Mae and Obama and everybody is saying they want to turn these into rentals this time. How would you imagine that to look? Lisa, what do you think?
I think that's actually good, and I think that is exactly what the government's trying to do. I think what they're really trying to solve, and some trust attorneys here today that represent hedge funds said the same thing, they're trying to solve the problem of these people not really leaving their homes. By turning these around and selling them to private investors, the people who are being foreclosed on may still be able, depending upon how the legalese of the state or the locality is, it is local, they may be able to still stay in their homes or stay in the same area in a foreclosed property and not have to go anywhere, and it will solve a crisis from a government perspective. So I agree with Scott. It's all going to be about local. I think the hedge funds themselves, the days of the funds I've represented, are going to diminish. I think we're going to see more private equity amongst private investors pooling their own monies together if they need to buy multiple properties, if they're cheap enough, if their price is there, where they can make a dollar and they can make a potential income tax benefit and appreciation eventually. John Groom can answer the tax issue better than I. But I would think in the end, lenders that keep their property for the long term, this is going to be a great opportunity. And if you've got people you already do business with that you trust, that you do equity participations as an example, I could see that being a winner in this arena.
Very well put. That kind of leads me into the next segment I want to talk about, actually. And Lisa, I think it was you that said there's a lot of anxious money and a lot of private money, and everyone's trying to figure out what to do. Sky, you alluded to investing local, but I actually want to turn this back over to John Groom a little bit, because John, you've got an interesting perspective to everybody tonight. You're not only an avid and long-term real estate investor yourself, but you also have the advantage of being a CPA and tax transaction expert to really high-level people that are very well off, some certainly in real estate and some that are not. For these guys that are business owners but not avid real estate investors, how much pain are they feeling today with the market as bad as it is and trying to figure out how to cut their losses and get things moving forward again? What is their perspective of today's economy?
I think Scott put his hand on it, put his finger on it, in that the normal traditional sources of funds aren't there. So in everything we're talking about pooling private money and getting all these houses, there's not as much private, fee simple cash out there to chase the 2 million houses and the other 2 million that are coming into the pipeline as far as foreclosures and everything. And this has a spillover effect, and where it's affecting me and my clients, where the opportunity is the depression in prices and the longer time that the houses are on the market has created some really interesting seller finance opportunities. And so all those skills that some of the older of us learned way back in the old days that have fallen into disfavor in the last 20 years are really coming back in full force now. If Mike Meeker was still giving his paper course, he'd be selling it. Matter of fact, I think I saw one of his old manuals for sale on eBay for $500 last month, and which is a superb manual, and I think most of all of us have been to his class. But for my clients who aren't already real estate investors, they don't have any alternative to go. So what I'm counseling is to find a way to minimize the risk, and that you can't minimize the risk, keep it in small enough gulps, or that they can afford to lose the 40,000 here, or the 10,000 here, or the 100,000 here, but getting involved where they're buying into the expertise, usually involving themselves with other people on their team, so they don't have to learn the skills of management. I know how to manage, David knows how to manage, you know how to manage, but we took a long time to learn how to do that. For a lot of the professionals with whom I work, it makes a lot more sense to them to just own part of that house, or be the finance arm of the house, or get the appreciation on the house, or do whatever. Pete Fortunato has told me more than once that if he had to do it all over again, every deal he got, he would give half of it away to have somebody else manage it, to have somebody else take care of the repairs and everything, that he would have come out a lot farther along in the long run. I think most of us looking back would agree with that. So what I think my people are looking for, professionals that aren't already involved in real estate, is A, how can they do it in ways that don't force them to borrow a bunch of money, to put their whole net worth into one big deal or whatever, but also how can they find somebody they can trust? And that's kind of an issue for these guys, because they know the law, or they know architecture, or they know dentistry. They don't know real estate, and they're afraid sometimes that they hand their money off to somebody on something they don't know about. So for me, to the extent that you guys can create a climate of trust, referrals, and that thing to shorten that curve. Jimmy Napier used to call it the time you spend spitting and whittling, that let somebody know who you're dealing with. That's what I think would get my people off the dime and get them to write a check.
I mean, that is great.
Betty, I wanted to kind of comment about that, about what I've seen changes in the seller finance note business over, you know, the past 30 years. And, you know, I'm an old friend of Mike Meeker. Friendly competitors, but you know, for 30 years I've been in the note buying business, and what's changed the most over the past 30 years is that the note industry, the seller finance note industry, has become an industry. And so now you can hire people to do professional due diligence. Now you can hire people to manage the investment, to manage the servicing of the investment. And so that's what becomes a great opportunity for the private investor, is they like notes a lot of times better than real estate, because they have a lender's level of management requirement and not a landlord's level of management requirements. And you can have a loan third-party serviced, and all you'd have to do is literally look in your checking account every month, because they wire the money into your account. And that is very different than the note industry of 20 years ago.
Wow, that's outstanding, Eddie.
Good point. Really good points. And so finding a good catalyst for a private lender to work with is really critical. And if they can find a good catalyst, or a really strong real estate investor who's got the skills to manage and the skills for acquisition, can be very valuable to the person that has the money who doesn't know what to do with it.
Jim, can I make a comment?
Yeah, go ahead.
This is Walter again. What I have seen with the people moving into our market and buying in bulk, they got such a tight buying criteria that the only thing they're going to end up with is crappy houses, you know, because they got to get these. I've seen it, so they got to rent times 30 months is the most they'll pay for a house. And so what that means is they're going to end up with poor quality houses. And so the opportunity for the guy that can move up the food chain a little bit and get a better house for the long term, I think is going to be far better off than competing with all these low-priced, bottom-fishing folks that come into the market. That's my take on our market anyway.
Walter, you always told me some houses are trading sardines, right?
Right, right. That's exactly right. They're not eating sardines.
Yeah, some are trading and some are eating. That's right. Well, Walter, while I've got you talking here, what are some changes you've seen in your own local market? You're in Jackson, where it was like an investing mecca for a little while there. Go ahead.
Well, we have seen a lot of changes, and Scott is in, we're in the same market. Scott and I enjoy meeting every week together as fellow journeymen in the real estate world. One thing, it's gotten a lot lonelier, the real estate investment game, because everybody's gone. I really
a lot of things.
Yeah. And people are not showing up at the courthouse steps. I had a foreclosure that I was involved with 2 weeks ago. There was a 1993 mortgage got foreclosed on, and the attorney had the bid amount was $2,900, and there was not one person who called the attorney. And so what I'm saying is that there's such a great opportunity because nobody's left standing. There are not many. And so that's one thing. The other thing is that Scott and I have been working on a couple of different models, but, you know, the house that you can provide financing to the person who can't get a loan today, which is almost everybody, you know, it's so hard to get a FHA loan now in our market, that if you can provide some steady, less than rent payments for a house, even if they have to fix it up some, there's plenty of people that have cash down to buy that house. And the last one I did, it was a $70,000 house that they put $10,000 down. So I think that's really stepping into that role was way important at the beginning of my career, and it's more important now, 30 years later.
You know, Walter, I want to see what you and Scott think about this, but I had a long meeting today with a 25-year seasoned real estate investor here in Dallas-Fort Worth, and we in the Hispanic market is naturally big here in Dallas-Fort Worth, and they have, you know, mattress money, as you've heard the expression, and very common to see them with a 10 or, you know, $12,000 cash down payment on a $75,000 house. And I told the real estate investor today that I thought there was less inventory for those guys to be able to buy today than there was, 5 years ago. And he said, Eddie, I think you're exactly right. Now, you're saying, now that's crazy, Eddie. There's all these foreclosed properties. How could there be less inventory today for that Hispanic buyer seeking seller financing? And I said, it's because they're competing with all of these cash buyers that have abandoned the stock market, and they're buying these properties for rentals. And he totally agreed with the inventory analysis that I made. And I'm just curious if that makes sense to you guys or it doesn't.
No, I think that's a good point, Eddie, and I appreciate you bringing it up. Scott, what do you think?
Well, if you're talking about, a $70,000 house in our market would probably be somewhere in the, 50 to 70% of median value, depending on, where it's located. But, those houses, we're seeing a lot of those houses out there. The problem is they're being offered on all cash basis. And obviously that cuts out the owner financed option to a lot of these people that are willing to put down a substantial chunk of money as a down payment, which I think is a good play. I think in our market, you could probably pick those houses up for right now, you know, somewhere in the neighborhood of $25,000 to $30,000. You can pick up a real nice house. That's not the market that I'm particularly interested in because it's a little, you know, I just keep going back to why not invest in median priced houses?
Right.
I mean, what performs better in the market? And so in our market, that's a 3-bedroom, 2-bath home with a 2-car carport, a garage, central heat and air on a slab. I mean, there's just nothing that has performed better for me personally over the last 30 something years. And, you know, it rents well. It rents for a high dollar right now. There's a demand for it. And when the market comes back, those will be the first houses that sell. So, you know, if you're looking at a long-term play, I think, you know, picking around in that median price range is just going to be dynamite, as opposed to either side of the curve from the median. I mean, you go up $500 to $1 million houses. I mean, what are they worth? I mean, it's hard to tell. And you can wrap up a whole lot of capital in the acquisition and holding costs on those, and they don't rent as well. So,
what's the median price in your market?
Say that again, Lisa.
What's the median price you're talking about? That 3-bedroom, 2-bath house.
I'd say on average, somewhere in the 125 range. It varies from area to area, but if you're just going to stick your thumb up in the air, I'd say a $125,000 house. I mean, there's in some areas it's more like 140 to 150. Other areas it might be a little around more like 100,000. But
so your philosophy is the people listening on the call should, and I agree with you, they shouldn't start with starter homes like you see some of these. People that come in there and they buy really cheap, they fix them up, they use investor money, and they rent them out with investor money, and they're doing the turnkey operation kind of thing. You're talking about a nicer home in a nicer neighborhood where people want to stay, they make a good investment for the long term, and when the market goes up, they'll be the first houses to sell.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, I
mean, so, I mean, that's just doing the homework. And you can go out, certainly you can go out and buy a house that's going to rent for 2% a month of the value of it. But it's going to be in a worse neighborhood, and it's going to attract worse, not the kind of tenants that you really want to deal with. There's going to be a lot of vacancy, a lot of management issues. A lot of the really good managers in our areas won't even manage those properties. They're just too much work. But you put a nice median price house in front of them, they'll take those all day long. So the professional managers in our marketplace even say that that's the best house from a management perspective. And let's face it, I mean, in my opinion, that's the key is going to be the management of those properties over the next, who knows how long, 5 to 10 years, let's say. Who knows when the market will start coming back and prices will start appreciating again. But we know it'll happen sooner or later, more likely later right now. So, I mean,
right.
We're looking at 10 years out. So that's,
right.
It's a 10-year holding
exactly,
period, my perspective.
Right. And in this, and that's exactly what this article talked about with the Obama administration. The management of these properties will be the key to what they're going to do with selling those properties to investors.
Yep.
Lisa,
so
I'm a little bit
good.
Lisa?
Yes.
John Groom here. I'm a little bit concerned. Some of my clients that are in the East Coast states and guys in Pennsylvania, guys in Philly particularly, sometimes the management has the heavy government on it to a long extent. You made one comment when you first started about that Fannie and Freddie might actually impose their will as far as certain regulatory issues, kind of like Section 8 and things like that. There's a lot of people who won't do Section 8 because there's too much government oversight. Do you see that as a potential problem at all?
Well, I think they haven't really ironed it out yet. They've got so many different issues regulatory-wise on their plate. we can have a separate conversation, which I would love to do, on fair market value, because it's driving me crazy right now in relationship to IRAs and certain accounts. But what they're really looking at is making sure the management is really a cookie-cutter management. So when they finally unload this bulk of foreclosed properties, they never want to see it again. They want a simple solution, and to them, Section 8 is not a simple solution. That doesn't
mean I don't get it. If they sell a house for 25 or 50 or whatever the number is, once mm-hmm. they're out from under the house, what do they care what the owner does with it? I don't.
Well, what's the owner going to do with it? This is just their philosophy of trying to unload it, because these properties at one time would not be Section 8 properties. I know who you're talking about in Philly. They're great guys, and they should definitely look into this program, because Pennsylvania has some other state funding besides Section 8 that would be relevant to those guys. What I'm saying here is just on what they're releasing, what they want to talk about is unloading foreclosures in bulk that are decent foreclosures. The Odell Barnes model, I don't know if you know who I'm talking about, but I know some people in the call do. The Odell Barnes model, they can unload those to the hedge funds for $2,000 and $3,000 wholesale. They're looking to unload the nicer homes to private investors to get out from this nightmare, and they're looking to do that as quickly as possible with good management in place. That's the only press that's come out on it. Talking to Fannie Mae when we did in October, their answer to everything was, if they don't solve the problem, the Attorney General will. So eventually, this is their first introduction. We don't have enough information to know which programs they're going to allow investors to still take advantage of.
It'll be interesting for sure. All right. Scott, I've got a question for you. You've been an active player, on the street making deals and investing for decades now. And you've got some interesting perspectives. I'm wondering if you could give our listeners one or two overriding themes that have helped you year in, year out, decade after decade to be successful, both in the times where things were easy and then also in times where there was a challenge or a struggle along the way. What were some of the principles that you've been able to use to get you through both the peaks and the valleys over, two or three decades?
Well, probably the biggest one is managing debt. I've always been very conservative with debt, and I'm basically a long-term buy and hold guy. So I didn't get involved in refinancing, pulling cash out, doing those types of things. I wanted to make sure the numbers worked when I went in, and then aggressively paid off debt. So, when this downturn came, I'm sitting with a portfolio of free and clear properties that if nothing else happens, I've got a pretty good monthly income coming in off of those without a lot of offsetting debt, very low level of debt. So I don't have to worry about debt taking me down in an economy where money becomes tighter and tighter all the time. And so I would say managing debt is critical to any long-term investor. Don't pull cash out. Debt's not profit. It's just debt, the leading cause of bankruptcy. And, I think you have to build safety into anything you do in real estate. No better way than managing your debt. The other thing is just, keep on churning. Go out there and do something. We've gone through massive changes in the market. It's put a lot of people out of business that both had too much debt and haven't been able to shift gears. And we're really in the process of shifting gears big time right now. I mean, even talking about this bulk sale of properties is a big shifting gears. I mean, Eddie's seen the gear shifts in the solar financing market, and it has become more professionalized. You've got to react to what's going on in the marketplace. So things that worked 4 or 5 years ago just aren't working today. And that, goes to the aspect of raising capital. It used to be easy to go get money. You just go down to the bank and, they'll lend you the money. Now they won't do that. The only thing they're doing is the government lends them money and they invest it back in the government. And, just they pick up 2 or 3%. They don't need customers anymore. It's just, I, in fact, I even had a banker call me this week wanting to know if I could help one of her customers refinance some of his properties. You know, they won't do it. And now they're looking over at the private sector, the people that are out there actually doing stuff, to see if they can help them out. So, I mean, I think the banks have really, I mean, haven't we really seen a major change in banking? And a lot of that's been from the top down. Government has been forcing them into this position that they're in, but they're becoming less and less valuable in their position as it concerns real estate investors, which has also forced us all out to go out and raise capital in some other fashion, which is, you know, what it turns out to be is going to be a superior fashion, and I don't think we're ever going to go back to the banks. I don't think the banks can make it attractive enough. Once we solve the capital requirements of our business on a private level, we won't need the banks any longer, and we'll find a superior way to do business. So there's a big shift in the in if you're going to grind the gears, that's a good one to grind them on right now.
Yes. Yeah, those are great points, and I think everybody should fire their banks. That's for sure, Scott. Walter, kind of the same question to you. You've been doing this for 2-3 decades now, through good times, bad times, all kinds of shifts in the markets, and through good times and struggles. How have you been able to make it through? And what one or two overriding principles could you pass on to some other folks that are on the call today? And I know there's some really young folks on also that are in their early 20s. What kind of advice did you give them?
Yeah, one point would be looking what the credit card companies have done to the borrowers. When they got behind, they would jack the rates up to make it unaffordable. You know, I've seen that time and time again. So they start out at 14% and the borrower gets behind, and then all of a sudden it's 33% and they can't make the payments. And so what I have seen in everything that I touch, the Great Reset has been going on the last 3.5-4 years, and virtually every mortgage that I'm involving with has to be some kind of workout. And it's not always a negative workout. I called up a guy who's paid on time for the last 4 years to a seller finance note that I sold to an IRA, so I still monitor it. And I suggested to the borrower to send me a proposal to reduce the payment. Now, he's not even behind, but I know he's getting pressured from the force of the market. And so what we ought to be doing is cutting everybody some slack to make sure that they're alive, because that's a better place to be than having a dead borrower and a dead asset. You know, it's all a workout. So I would just encourage everybody to think that way, because whoever's getting the pressure, you know, that's you don't want the asset back in most cases. So that's just one point that I would make, Jim.
Okay. John Groom, let me ask you this. The people that we all associate with, how important is that circle to you in your ability to have success over all the years that you have? How important is it to choose the right people to hang out with?
Well, that's absolutely key. I mean, it's the same thing that Pete Fortunato says about paper. There's the quantity and there's the quality of the paper. I've been absolutely very lucky, because I get to see the numbers. For me, reading a tax return or financial statements like reading a comic book, so it's a little bit easier for me than a lot of other people to see who's been in the game long term, who's stayed honest, who's not cheated somebody when they've had the opportunity to cheat somebody. But finding those people that you can deal with, I think Jack Miller used to say, it's not the number of deals you make, it's the number of good deals you make, or another way of saying is the number of bad deals you don't make. Probably half the people I've dealt with have actually lost everything at one point and had to start all over. So finding honest people, and that's kind of one of the things that I do, is I do refer people, but there are people I've known for a long time that I know. I mean, I've sent money to people on this call, sight unseen. You know, we're a good deal. I own houses with people that are on this call, where I've sent them the check and paperwork to follow. And they say a reputation is like a laminated beam. It goes on a thin layer at a time,
but it will support a million-dollar check with no paperwork. So it is absolutely a key. The biggest thing that I'm seeing, though, as far as tax advantage and structuring and building your net worth quick, has been a spillover of this. The depression of the prices because of all the foreclosures and everything. But not only is there what people can do in their self-directed retirement accounts now, but on the American side of the border, shall we say, the stuff that goes on your tax return, when you're dealing with seller financing, there are just miracles that you can do. If you turn around and buy a house for $100,000, which is 100 payments of $1,000 a month at no interest, and you turn right around and you sell it at $80,000 on a 7% note, your tax return shows that you lost $20,000, but yet you're still making a healthy cash. You're still making a healthy profit on the deal. I won't go into the present value concepts because there's too many people here that know them. And if you don't know them, they take a while to learn. So I've been coaching clients to learn about seller financing and the elegance of present value concepts that's buried in it. And I really sympathize with Lisa on how hard it, with all that stuff going on, how hard it is to a proper market value onto a particular deal. Good luck.
Well, John, right. I think it'd be a great business model for you to develop a way that you can help, whether they're IRAs or not, because the law is changing so rapidly, and that's not for tonight's conversation, but how people do fair market evaluation in their IRA accounts is becoming a very big deal right now. And since you're so proficient and so well-known in our investor community, that would be a great thing for you to address maybe in another call with Dave and Jim on how people do for real fair market value, because third parties are going to have to do it for them.
Great point. Walter, let me go back to you for a minute. Any last words of wisdom that you could offer to the folks that are on tonight as we begin 2012? I mean, what should they be doing differently in approaching the opportunities today?
Well, every day is a new opportunity to learn something. And, of course, we get all sucked up into that with the Internet, you know, bombardment of new ideas, and I go chase them just like everybody else does. But, I think that learning from folks that have gone ahead of you is important, and staying in touch, because the same problems that maybe some of our listening audience may be having, somebody else has solved that problem. And we just got to realize that every day there's a killer deal out there that somebody's willing to let go or provide 0% interest financing, and it's up to us to go find it. So I don't think we need to be discouraged. I think we need to get busy, get out in the marketplace. That's
all
it.
Right. Excellent. Outstanding. And I completely agree. And I thank you guys so much for your candor and sharing your decades of experience with everybody. David, at this point, I'd kind of like to turn it back over to you. I think they've pounded out a lot of great ideas. And I've taken notes while moderating that I'm going to go back and listen to again. So I really appreciate everybody's insight tonight. David?
Yeah, exactly, Jim, and everybody on the panel tonight. You know, outstanding job. Thank you. Wow. Selfishly, I have to admit that I wanted this call to be put together because I wanted to hear your answers to these very profound questions. So thank you for sharing. And Lisa, I think she might have had to leave the call, but I'm really impressed that Lisa actually met the real Fannie Mae because, you know, I've never even seen a picture of her. So that was very impressive. Anyway. Let me try to summarize. Outside of the very insightful predictions and strategies from our guest panelists tonight, what is that overriding takeaway from tonight's call? And we had a real opportunity to have five very successful, experienced real estate players who each of them been involved in the industry at least 30 years each. And I know that they had to have begun, you know, before the age of 10 because none of these people act or look a day over 45. But each one is successful in their own right, and I know that each of them has overcome some significant hardships, serious setbacks, and have had to completely regroup somewhere in the past. Any successful person has experienced that. But what makes them successful is that they get back on their feet, they jump back in, and find the new opportunity. So what makes them different from maybe some of us? What I found out through my own path to finding freedom in my real estate investments is that it never comes down to one particular strategy or tactic, and it certainly doesn't come down to trying to hit the big home run. But the difference is that each one of these experts is successful because of the people with whom they associate, the people that are attracted to them, because of who they are. This business, in fact, no successful business is ever prosperous in a vacuum. If a team sport. So as I mentioned in the opening dispatch, if you are struggling, but you've attended lots of seminars, you've read books, you've actively done at least a few deals, but you don't see where this is making any significant difference, then maybe it's time you found some new people with whom to associate. And in that search, you find a mentor or mentors. It's the association with other credible and trustworthy people from whom you can learn, but also you can often do business with that will truly propel you towards your own goals. I know that is a fact of my own life, and I can promise you, whether it was said on the call or tonight or not, that that would be the common element that every one of these successful experts would point to in their achievement of success and the ability to overcome previous barriers and obstacles. I didn't just meet Jim or Eddie or Lisa or Scott, John, or Walter on the internet or in my local community or my marketplace. I wasn't born into their family. We didn't grow up in the same neighborhood, and we didn't go to school together. And I didn't meet them in dental school. I mean, no negative meaning given to my friends from those groups. It's not that you can't find good people in your own market, and you should seek them out, but we all live in different places. I met each of the people on this call tonight face-to-face at a conference somewhere, and our relationship evolved over time, which is how it should be. Trust is not developed on the first handshake, but over the years, not only did we kindle a friendship, but I've also done business of some level with everyone on this call. I can call any one of these people on the phone at any time. Unless they're busy, they will accept my call and we can talk. And folks, that's where the absolute best ideas and breakthroughs come from. These associations with real people who are proven and successful. Yes, all the other training, the seminars, the workshops, books, CDs, they're all part of the tools, but without your own group of like-minded network people, including at least some people who have already gone down a path that you are considering, then your own path to reach your goals will be slow and frustrating. You see, these things don't happen by accident. You have to take action to get out of your relatively small world at home and broaden your horizons and your relationships. So to that end, Jim and I have planned a live two-day event in Dallas for the first weekend in March. It's a Friday and Saturday, March 2nd and 3rd. We're going to go into great depth into the topics and strategies that work today, and we know we can help any one of you go to the next level or levels in your own investing program. But one of the key differences in what we will teach is that we won't just dazzle you with creative deals and structures. You'll get plenty of that. But the other part that we'll go into much deeper level on is how you build your network of people, your team, your associations, just as I was pointing out earlier. Who's on your team? Because, again, I can't emphasize this enough. All of the fancy techniques, the tactics, the strategies are absolutely worthless and irrelevant if you don't have financial friends, mentors, and coaches to help you break through your own self-imposed limits. Look, we all have them, and until we acknowledge that and then do something to change that, you might as well just bang your head against a brick wall. By the way, Eddie Speed, who you heard earlier on the call tonight, and Mr. Quincy Long, who is an attorney and owner at Quest IRA, an administrator for self-direct IRAs, they will both be with us speaking at our March event. So we've priced this event extremely reasonably, and the ticket includes a partner or spouse, so the barrier to entry is very low here. Our early bird pricing is going to run out soon, so if you're on the fence, but don't wait. In addition, for those who register by midnight this Friday, January the 13th, we'll also include the digital version of a 6-CD series with transcripts on real estate wealth transfer opportunities. It's everything you need to know both strategically and tactically to make money in the current market. And several of the experts on the call tonight with us were part of that series. So if you like what you heard tonight, this would be an exceptional bonus if you're ready to take action now. Now, Jim, we also promised a special bonus for those who were on the call live with us tonight, and that special bonus is Jim's special report on private lenders. That's how to find them, how to approach them, how to structure deals with them. If a lack of money or investment capital is slowing you down, then this report will open doors for you. To get this report, just email my assistant, Debbie, and that email is Debbie, D-E-B-B-I-E, at davidphelpsinternational.com, Debbie at davidphelpsinternational.com. And finally, I want to thank each of our guests tonight, Eddie Speed, Lisa Morin-Broma, Walter Wofford, John Groom, and Scott Britton, for taking time out of your day and away from your your family to be part of this call. I know the information that you provided will be very helpful to all that were on the call or will hear the replay or read the transcript. And thanks to each of you who took the time tonight to listen to us, because, you know, we value your time as much as we value our own. And, Jim, thank you for all of your hard work as well. You know, you're a great person to work with. It's indeed a pleasure to work with you, and I'm really blessed to have you as a friend. I want to wish each of you on the panel, as well as each of you attending this call tonight, the best of the new year and for a healthy and prosperous 2012. So with that, I'm going to bid everybody adieu. Thanks again for being on the call. Jim, thank you so much.
Yeah, and thank you, David. Everybody needs to go out and put the great wisdom that you heard tonight to work and make it happen. That's your next step.
All right.
The next one. Thanks.
Good night, everybody.
Thank you, David. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.